This is Intercepted. I'm Jeremy Scahill in New York. Be sure to check out our website, theintercept.com, where we have a lot of in-depth investigative reporting. And this week we published an incredible series of investigative articles about the FBI. And of course, Donald Trump is now going to be heading up a vast surveillance network internationally, but also at home. And these documents, which we published under the banner of the FBI's secret rules, it's more than 1,000 pages of secret FBI documents showing their surveillance tactics, how they entrap people in these terror plots that the FBI seems to be so good at breaking up, and these entrapment campaigns increasingly aimed at Muslims. And right now, to discuss that, I'm joined by two people: Mike German, who is a former FBI special agent who worked on covert operations and actually infiltrated radical right-wing white supremacist organizations. And I'm also joined by our editor-in-chief, Betsy Reed. Betsy, I wanted to start with you. There's a historical context to this that has to do with the Church Committee that exposed U.S. Covert operations inside of the United States, surveillance operations inside of the United States. Now Donald Trump is going to inherit these vast surveillance powers. What did you find in this investigation?
In the wake of the Church Committee exposing all the abuses of mostly the Hoover era of the FBI, a number of restrictions were put in place on the powers of the FBI. And those restrictions were intended to prevent the kind of overreach that involved the infiltration of political and religious organizations and all of the scandals that came to light in the mid-70s. In recent decades, that system of rules and restraints has evolved. The problem is, it has evolved largely in secret. So that's why what The Intercept is publishing today, which is a package of almost a dozen articles, along with copies of three crucial manuals, including the FBI's overall governing rulebook, known as the DIOG, and classified policy guides for counterterrorism and confidential informants. And this gives us and the public a vital glimpse of how the FBI understands its own power and understands the constraints on its own power.
Mike German, you worked for a decade and a half in the FBI. You infiltrated extremist right-wing organizations. You were one of those agents that had to go undercover and use some of the tactics that were developed in the decades that were talking about when we talk about the Church Committee investigations. What's your concern about what is revealed in these documents and the policies of the FBI?
What I found doing that work is that the legal structure that was created by Attorney General Edward Leavy to prevent the abuses during the Hoover era were actually very effective in making sure I was focused on the right people. Right? You can imagine going into a group of neo-Nazis, not too many people who you're going to find that you like or have any sort of agreement with. But I had this structure where I had to document my reasonable suspicion that each individual I was interacting with was likely to commit some federal crime or had committed some federal crime. And that simple practice of having to sit down and look at the evidence and say, wow, you know, I can write up two sheets on this guy and I can't come up with two sentences on that guy. My investigation should shift toward the people where I have the best evidence. And what I found was that was effective not just for protecting the rights of people who are just venting their spleen and holding views I didn't agree with, but for making my cases effective in finding people who are actually going to do harm. So what I saw shortly after 9/11 was an attack on that system of guidelines that limited or focused the FBI with reasonable suspicion towards suspicionless gathering. And what's so clear in these new documents is how the FBI is targeting people not because of evidence of wrongdoing, not with clear legal standards like probable cause and reasonable suspicion, but are granted an awful lot of leeway to conduct very aggressive investigation against people who are not thought to have been doing anything wrong now or in the future.
So when people hear about The FBI has broken up a plot where there were some Muslims who attended a particular mosque in New Jersey, and they were trying to buy explosives to take into another state to blow up a Jewish community center. What should the critical thinker be looking for there, or being skeptical of when we hear these kinds of reports, which we hear all the time now, of the FBI Sure. breaking up these terror plots involving, you know, Muslims?
Right. And a lot of what you see now is not plots to commit an act of terrorism, but just to travel abroad to a conflict zone. And that's, we've branded that in certain countries as this very dangerous activity when the evidence doesn't actually show that. But for the actual sting operations that create a plot, typically what I look for first is, was there involvement of any real terrorist group? Second, if there isn't any contact with a real terrorist group, whether the defendants obtained weapons on their own. In this country, it's very easy to get weapons. And the idea that you would have a group that was, that we are going to label as a terrorist group that had never on their own sought to obtain any kind of weaponry is a huge clue to me. I mean, before 9/11, if I had suggested this group were about to commit some act of violence and they had not a single pistol, that would have been hard to swallow. So one of the things that troubles me isn't just that the FBI now is willing to provide weapons, which we really didn't do prior to that, but they provide very sophisticated weapons, you know, military-grade plastic explosives, surface-to-air missiles, these kind of things that blow completely out of proportion the threat that was actually posed.
What I think you can see in all those cases you describe, which The Intercept has reported on extensively, the use of basically what amounts to entrapment schemes to make it seem like they're busting this high-level terrorist, you know, plot, but actually turns out to be some sort of hapless guy in his mother's basement. And in the manuals that we have and that we're publishing is the evolution of the FBI from what people used to think of as, like, you know, the guys who were protecting you against organized crime, to a massive domestic intelligence operation that operates in way more similar ways to the CIA and the NSA than to the police. And that's really at the broadest level what you can see in these manuals.
I want to read part of the overview that Betsy Reed wrote with Glenn Greenwald, just to give a sense of the kinds of information that's revealed in these documents. The Bureau's agents can decide that a campus organization is not legitimate and therefore not entitled to robust protections for free speech, dig for derogatory information on potential informants without any basis for believing they are implicated in unlawful activity, use a person's immigration status to pressure them to collaborate, and then help deport them when they no longer are useful, conduct invasive assessments without any reason for suspecting the targets of wrongdoing, demand that companies provide the Bureau with personal data about their users in broadly worded national security letters without actual legal authority to do so, fan out across the internet along with a vast army of informants infiltrating countless online chat rooms, peer through the walls of private homes, and more. Mike, your response to that?
That's exactly right. The guidelines, the Attorney General guidelines that govern the FBI's authorities were changed four or five times since 9/11. The most drastically in 2008, when this category of assessments was brought on that requires no factual predicate. There are no facts that are required before an agent can start a very intrusive investigation that involves recruiting and tasking informants. It could involve physical surveillance. It could involve covert and overt interviews. And an overt interview doesn't sound like a very intrusive tactic, but when you see how it's used in practice, where an FBI agent goes to your workplace and interviews your boss about whether you're a terrorist, maybe goes to your landlord and interviews your landlord and your neighbors about whether you're a terrorist, that could have a serious effect on your life. So these are powers that what we found through the Hoover era need constraint, particularly since a 2010 Inspector General report revealed the FBI agents are often making their own allegations to justify preliminary investigations. So just as you suggested, the idea that an agent might look at some political group they're opposed to and say, well, is it potentially possible in the future that somebody within this group commits a federal crime? Of course it is. That's true of all of us. But that's all that's necessary to justify a very intrusive investigation. Well,
and I remember talking to you back in 2014 when we obtained the government's secret rule book for watchlisting people. And one of the I think, stunning statements in there was that agents can nominate someone to be classified as a known or suspected terrorist even in the absence of concrete evidence or irrefutable facts. And so the whole, you know, the whole thing is very Orwellian, not to be cliche, but it is.
And not to mention the fact that they have incredibly powerful tools of surveillance at their disposal, including stingrays, otherwise known as cell site simulators. They have infrared technology that can allow them to, in some cases, look through the walls of private homes. And a range of other very powerful tools.
And at the same time, we had a push toward information sharing between the agencies.
Exactly.
And so what you have is the NSA engaged in some very broad collection programs that the FBI agent sitting at his desk now has access to.
And that's a revelation, actually, of our series. There's a story about name trace requests that can be issued even on the basis of an assessment, which requires, you know, almost no basis for suspicion.
And I think it gets to this concept of domestic intelligence being somehow divorced from law enforcement, right? That if we're doing something for an intelligence purpose, there aren't really the same constitutional limitations on the activity that's being conducted.
So I just want to say one thing in fairness to the FBI. I mean, it's very clear looking at these documents that there are very few limits on its ability to pursue terrorism investigations. There are constraints that are a legacy of the Church Committee era on its ability to violate what are clearly First Amendment protected activities. And you can also see throughout the documents a very keen awareness of the Constitution. Right. Mm-hmm. And the FBI, in response to questions from our reporters, has given a series of explanations of their constitutional justification, how they understand their ability under the law and under the Constitution to conduct this whole range of activities. So we're very critical of that. But it is worth acknowledging that they do actually, in theory, respect the Constitution. And I do think that, like, at this moment, when we have a president who is, you know, basically an authoritarian, I don't think there's much evidence that he even understands what the Constitution is. I think a lot of people are actually looking to the FBI to be the guardians of our constitutional rights when it comes to these matters. So that's why this series and these documents are so important for the public to see. Because if this is the last stop, our last defense against unconstitutional searches and seizures, we need to understand exactly what the FBI sees as its authority and the limits on that authority.
Mike, just because we have you here, I wanted to ask you your assessment of how these executive orders that Trump is, you know, churning out, like they're his tweets, you know, the banning of people from seven countries, some of the comments he's made on torture, is that actually going to make the country safer? Or is it going to affect the agents who did the kind of work that you did in a negative way? Like, what's going to happen as a result of this from your perspective as a law enforcement professional?
I think it's going to make things much worse and much more difficult for law enforcement officers and intelligence officers. I mean, having been inside groups that plan terrorist acts, you know, you're giving fodder to the terrorist groups that would target you to argue that, yes, this is a cultural war, this is a religious war, this is something that we have to stand up to now, because if we don't, they'll only get stronger and have more weapons directed against us. So I think it's going to be entirely counterproductive in our efforts abroad, but also our efforts here. I mean, these sorts of things, and we've moved from dog whistles to overtly racist
sirens.
Statement.
You know,
exactly.
Like, yeah. Drudge siren every day at the White House with the racism.
And that will encourage an element within the violent neo-Nazi far right. So it's really a horrible way of going about it, particularly since we are living in an age that is really of such incredible historical security, right? The violent crime is way down from where it was the amount of terrorism over the last 10 years is far lower than it was in the 1970s when I first started looking to go into law enforcement.
Well, you're clearly not reading the president's tweets,
exactly.
Mike, which is the real news these days.
Exactly. So we have this strange situation where terrorists are trying to use fear as a weapon, and rather than mitigating that fear, our government is amplifying it and increasing it even beyond all reason.
Right. I mean, Trump has found a way to unite ISIS and the Ku Klux Klan in a mass celebration of some of his initial policies and executive orders. And I think that's a very good indication of why this is so dangerously wrong. The fact that those groups are celebrating it as a victory in their respective causes says a lot about, you know, what Trump is actually doing here. Mike German, a former special agent in the FBI, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Our editor-in-chief, Betsy Reed, thank you as well. And I direct people to TheIntercept.com to read this spectacular series with a lot of great reporting from Cora Currier, Trevor Aronson, and others.
Thanks, Jeremy.